Welcome, everyone, once again to the Investing in Real Estate podcast. I am Clayton Morris, and I am joined this week by my wife. Say hello.
Hello.
That's Natalie Morris. You know her over from nataliemorris.com. And of course, we like to have her join us here once a week on, or I'm sorry, once a month here on the podcast to dive into sort of like the family structure of how we do things with taxes and how we really maximize our real estate investing. But we are joined by a really special guest today. I'm saying really special because the book that I think changed our lives and the way in which we structure our family business, we can all point to one man, Mike Michalowicz, his book, Profit First, which is the subtitle is A Simple System to Transform Any Business from a Cash-Eating Monster to a Money-Making Machine. We have structured our entire family business spreadsheets, everything around the Profit First system. And I am thrilled to have Mike on the show today with us. Mike, are you ready?
I am ready, and thank you for having me, and thanks for, engaging Profit First to its fullest. That's pretty freaking cool.
Well, we hope that we haven't engaged it to its fullest. I blame Natalie because she's really the sort of the brains behind implementing the system. You know, I read the book, I think maybe a year and a half ago, and I said, Natalie, read this and implement it.
Nice. Well, good job, Natalie.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm not sure I'm doing it 100% correctly, even though I diligently took notes and downloaded your sheets and I, go exactly by your distribution according to how much we make per year, but I still have so many questions. So that's why I was so excited that we actually have you in the flesh. Well, on Skype.
Right.
We don't have him tied up anyway, forcing him to answer our questions.
I want to kind of break it, down because we have a limited amount of time, obviously, with Mike. So I want to kind of at least set a little frame of reference for people. Mike, can you give us a little overview of the Profit First system? Obviously, you've got a lot of great books, and we could do a whole other episodes on the Pumpkin Plan, which I love as well. But today, I really want to focus on real estate investing and how someone who maybe owns one property, wants to get to 10 properties, 15 properties, can really implement the Profit First system in their lives to maximize the profits and tax benefits of it. Could you give us an overview of the Profit First system?
Absolutely. So Profit First is, I guess, summarized into a behavioral-based cash management system. And maybe that sounds a little bit heady, but I'll give a story behind it of how this works and what it is. I was blown away by a statistic I heard, and I think it was the SBA who reported it. I don't know the actual original source, but it said that 83% of businesses, small businesses, that do under $25 million in revenue, that's how it's defined, 83% are not profitable. 83% are living check by check. And that's true in real estate to, rolling cigars. I mean, any kind of business, if it's a small business, most businesses aren't surviving. But what struck me was how can so many people be smart enough and capable enough to get into their industry, attract clients and prospects, do their services, make money doing it, have clients raving or happy about the experience. Like, there's thousands of elements to running a business successfully, and we literally get it all right except one little piece. Most businesses can't figure out profit. So at first I thought it was us. Like, is there something wrong with us? Like, has our brain been lobotomized out of profit? And then I came to realize it's a behavioral response to the system we've been told to use, which is totally flawed. We're told that sales minus expenses equals profit. And while logically it makes sense, you have to sell stuff, you have to pay for stuff, and what's left over, you keep profit. Logically, it makes sense. Behaviorally, it's totally flawed because it's human nature when something's put last that we disregard its significance. We basically ignore it. Like, you wouldn't get sick, Clayton, and all of a sudden say, oh, I'm going to start putting my health last. No, you take and put my health first.
Right.
What's important gets prioritized. And so the old formula, sales minus expenses, we're saying sales and expenses are first. And so we try to sell hard and we try to grow, that's the word we use for expenses, constantly, and profit never happens. The summary is, in Profit First, I say take your profit first. Sales minus profit, take that profit first at every transaction equals expenses. And by taking your profit first, you're now prioritizing what's important.
So what I write about a lot on my blog is how to make your family finances into some kind of formal business, whether it's some kind of real estate investment business, or maybe you sell graphic design on Etsy, or maybe you're a dog walker, whatever it is, you know, the tax code really favors people who are entrepreneurial. So I talk a lot about how people can somehow turn their family into some kind of, you know, legitimate business. And for us, that's real estate investing. And so, you know, one of the big paradigm shifts I had to make was to think of us as a startup, because that's what we are, is that we are a startup as real estate investors. And so we started small and we're gaining our portfolio, building it out as much as we can, as fast as we can. And that's why your book was so game-changing for us, because if I think of us as a startup, then I can think about how I pay us and how I save to invest in the business and how I save for taxes and how I save for, you know, owner pay and, you know, this quarterly bonus that we take based on your system really helps us a lot. It's like last quarter we used it to take our kids to Disney World because
that's awesome.
It has to be something fun. You can't like pay a credit card with it. And we take it seriously. So maybe you can, you know, if we all can wrap our heads around our families as a startup, then we can implement this system. So maybe we can sort of break it down little by little and you can take us through the four places that you funnel your money when you make money.
Yep. So the practical application of it. So the concept is take your profit first. And what that means is when money comes into your business through sales or however you generate money, that it then gets pre-allocated to specific purposes. Let me kind of talk about the problem first. The traditional business setup or family business setup is that money comes in and we see that one checking account and we say, oh, I have X number of dollars available to do what I need to do next. And it often becomes an expense. And we use soft terms for expenses inevitably. Oh, I'm plowing it back. I'm reinvesting. I'm growing. I'm facilitating growth. But in the profit first method, what we do is we allocate money first to its different purposes. It's kind of like my mother did the envelope system when I was growing up. Like she would get money in, she'd put some money into the food envelope, some money into the give back to community envelope and so forth. And when she went food shopping, when she got to the food market, she always had enough money. Now, the interesting thing, it wasn't always the same amount of money, but she always had enough because she would make do with what was in there. And that's what the profit first concept is based on. When, say, $1,000 comes in for round number's sake, we predetermine a profit percentage. Let's say 10%. So $1,000 comes in, $100, 10%, will go into an account, an actual standalone checking or savings account at your bank, and we allocate the $100 there. We also have tax responsibilities, so we have to allocate money to taxes, maybe, just picking a random number, 15%. So 150 goes there. Then there's a owner's pay. As operators of this business, running the business, you need to be paid for what you do. Don't confuse, by the way, profit and owner's pay. Owner's pay is designed to support your lifestyle. That is the money you're being paid to run your business, and you're being paid, and that money you take out of it is to support your current lifestyle. The profit account, those distributions, are above and beyond your lifestyle. That's why I argue it's got to be a reward. However you want it to be a reward. Disney, pretty freaking awesome. And you can use it in any purpose, but not to support your existing lifestyle. For most business owners, we kind of glum all that money together, glop it together. And then when it comes out, we can't distinguish, is this to support my lifestyle? Is this something above and beyond? So we usually ramp our lifestyles up to the very last penny we have coming in, and we live check by check now in our life. So our business is now going to allocate money to owner's pay, that's one of the accounts, and to profit and tax. And then the last account is operating expenses. And what's so interesting about this, when you run the percentages, maybe the operating expenses account is 50%. Depends on your business, it can vary. Maybe it's 75%. Some businesses run it very tightly. Maybe it's 30% or 20%. But let's just say it's 50%. What that means is when $1,000 comes in, we used to say, I have $1,000 to run my business. Now the profit first system says, no, you don't have $1,000 to run your business. You have $500, that 50% in operating expenses, to run your business. The rest has been reserved already for your benefit and other purposes, but not to run your business on.
Okay. And so, you know, some of the comments that I've had on my blog when I've preached this system religiously is, oh my gosh, you have to have four different accounts. And that sounds like a pain in the butt. And maybe it is kind of a pain in the butt. And, you know, especially as real estate investors, we just had a meeting with our tax accountant and they're like, well, we want different LLCs for different assets. And I'm like, but that's different LLCs with four different bank accounts. And oh my gosh, my head is spinning. But I really think that you have to separate it like your mom's envelopes, because if you don't, it's too tempting to spend the government's money, right?
You must separate it. And you know, I've presented literally 2 days ago, 1,000 or 3 days ago now, 1,000 people in the Bahamas, and I'm talking to them about Profit First. And the first hand comes up and says, gosh, it's so many accounts, I can't do it. And I'm like, part of me wants to say, stop your whining. I mean, literally, right. Is it that hard to set up a bank account? Is it really? I think we're very drawn to the familiar. We've been running our business one way with one checking account, doing all these different things, and it's not been working. And it's very compelling, ironically, to keep doing what's familiar, even though it's not working, than trying something new. And when we just use this, the hard work of setting up four accounts or five accounts or whatever you do for your business, we use that as an argument to go back to what's already familiar and not working. So yeah, it's going to take an hour to go to the bank and set these accounts. But when it's done, you have absolute clarity. Now, other people have come to me, Natalie and Clayton, and said, oh, why don't I do this in a spreadsheet? Or better yet, why don't I do it in my accounting system? I can keep one bank account, but I'll just do this in my accounting system or in a spreadsheet. Well, here's the reality. Every accounting system already allocates money. It's called the chart of accounts. There's money allocated to tons of things. You know, how's that working for you now? For most people, it doesn't work. And the reason Profit First does work is because it's a behavioral system. It's in what's called our immediate behavioral path. When I'm managing my money, I honestly do not look at my P&L. I do not look at my balance sheet and my cash flow statement. Quite frankly, I don't even know how to read those properly. And then, as my accountant says, tie them all together and run KPIs against it, key performance indicators, and operating cash flow metrics, and then I'll know where my money is. That stuff is so far over my head, I revert to my natural behavioral path, which is log into my bank account and see what's available and make a gut decision. Profit First is set up that works within your natural default behavior. It's at your bank account. You cannot avoid it. It brings absolute clarity every time you log into your bank account. That's why these accounts are so important.
Today's episode is brought to you by Mac Weldon. I'm telling you what, Mac Weldon is better than whatever you're wearing right now. I've been on the hunt, no joke, for a long time to find the best and most comfortable fitting boxers underwear out there on the market. I've tried all kinds of different brands. And once I ordered from Mac Weldon, and I went, I said, all right, I'm going to try this. I'm just going to go to their website. I'm going to, you know, try one pair of underwear. And I couldn't believe, first of all, how easy it was to navigate and figure out what I wanted to buy on their website. So I went over there and I saw the different styles of underwear. I said, okay, these are the ones I want. Tried them. They came a few days later in really nice packaging. And I have to tell you, it's the best underwear I've ever worn, the most comfortable underwear I've ever worn. So I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to try it again. So I got one pair. Maybe that one pair was just like a good off the assembly line, so to speak. No. Because if you understand Mac Weldon, they actually labor over every stitch. They were so frustrated when they created the company about going into department stores and seeing the way that fabrics and different companies were putting their products up on the top shelf. They're like, these companies aren't even paying attention to the quality of the clothes like we will. Let's create our own company and focus on every stitch and make sure our clothes are as comfortable as humanly possible and as durable as humanly possible. They believe in smart design with premium fabrics and simple shopping. It was really super simple on their website. So I went back and then I ordered a few more things. And I have to tell you, holy smokes, I'm a big t-shirt fan. But you know what I can't stand? I can't stand those like types of t-shirts that like shrink up and it almost looks like a belly shirt after a while, after a few washings. So I ordered some of their t-shirts and they're so good that you can wear them just with jeans. You don't need to, you know, wear them underneath a shirt. And they fit so comfortably and they don't shrink and they look fantastic on you. So I've got a t-shirt that I bought some more underwear. And sure enough, the same level, the same consistency on the underwear across the next ones I bought. And so from now on, when I tell my parents, you know, my mom always, she's like, you're so incredibly difficult to shop for. I'm like, guess what? Christmas time, my birthday, just go to Mack Weldon, order me some new underwear, shirts, get me a zip-up hoodie, which I also got, by the way, and it is super comfortable. We're heading into the fall of the year now. I love it. It's like zip-up hoodie weather here on the East Coast. And this Mack Weldon, I got like a charcoal-colored, bluish-colored zip-up from them that I ordered. Thing is so comfortable. I could sleep in the thing. It's so comfortable. So you can get 20% off right now. I'm telling you, go check them out. You will not be disappointed. Absolutely the best. It's fantastic stuff. So go over to MackWeldon.com and use the promo code INVESTING. You just use that word INVESTING when you're checking out. You're going to get 20% off your first order. That's fantastic. So go to MackWeldon.com. That's M-A-C-K. W-E-L-D-O-N, MackWeldon.com, and then use the promo code INVESTING, and you are going to have a fantastic shopping experience. I can't wait for you to share on our channel. Let us know what you ordered. Don't be shy. You ordered some underwear? You ordered some of their great socks? Holy smokes, their socks are fantastic too. Check them out. Go over to MackWeldon.com, use that promo code INVESTING, save yourself 20%. And, you know, the structure of the business for me, it's so much clarity to know what you're working with, right? You mentioned this operating expenses account. It's like, okay, so if we want to spend $1,000 a month on marketing, or you know, whatever your business happens to be, and you're going to spend, you know, you can log right in. Whether maybe it's Facebook advertising, or maybe it's some other thing you're spending money on. You can log right in and see how much money you have to work with. And you're not having to back that out. It's right there. And you've already taken all of those other, you know, all of the, your profit out, everything is set aside, the taxes are set aside. And so you're not scrambling every quarter right to pay taxes, or at the end of the year, oh my God, we didn't even save for taxes because we've been spending everything on expenses.
Right. So there's a lot of little behavioral things that go on. In regards to taxes, there is a behavioral response called loss aversion. And loss aversion states that it's human nature that when we are in a position of losing something that we already possess, we will go to an extreme, often irrational measure to retain it. Yet we won't go to that same extreme to gain something equivalent. Here's an example. And we'll talk about houses in the real estate market. If you or I get a call from a mortgage company saying, we're going to repossess your house, or you know, we're going to call in your mortgage because you haven't made a payment, you're going to lose your house, I will go to an extraordinary measure not to lose my home. I will, you know, start working for Uber. I'll do whatever it takes, whatever hours it requires to retain my house. Now, the irony is I could always have done that level of work to gain the bigger house down the street, but I don't do it. It's human propensity that we are will make basically double the effort to keep what we already possess. So how this translates to taxes is when if you get taxes paid to you through a distribution or paycheck or however you take money out of your business, and then taxes are due, we experience loss aversion because we had the money. It's like me giving you $10 and saying, oh, hey, Clayton, give me back three of those bucks. It's like, thanks for 10, but what are you doing with these $3? That's weird. And we'll go to an extreme measure. Conversely, if I just gave you $7 and said, hey, thanks for having me on your show. Here's $7 to get yourself a cup of coffee. It's like, oh, that's still kind of weird, but you don't feel loss aversion of me taking the money back. When we experience loss aversion, especially when you're around taxes, we go to extreme measures, often spending erratically and irrationally to reduce the tax consequence, literally spending $10 to save three, which makes no sense whatsoever.
That's amazing.
You know, one of the lessons I learned from another book that I think put in conjunction with your book is really game-changing was Tax-Free Wealth by Tom Wheelwright. And he really makes the point that, you know, investment, capital investment in a business, whether it's buying real estate or any other real estate or any other business expense, is a taxable deduction. So if you can maximize your deductions, you lower your tax rate. And you say in your book, you know, really like 15% should be enough to put aside for taxes. And before we just were like, well, we hope that we'll have that money. You know, we'll just try not to spend it. But now right. We literally put it in a different bank with a transfer. So yes. I can't even really get to it because it was just too tempting to spend it.
And she won't even let me see it, Mike. I mean, like, she's like, cause she knows like I'll just buy a house with that cash. And I literally don't even have access. She was smart. She hasn't even given me, you know, she's like, you can't look at it. Just our tax account. Don't touch it. And the game changing thing for us as real estate investors, Mike, was that at the end of the year, we actually got money back on our taxes because, you know, we buy real estate. So right. The tax benefits of real estates are, you know, astronomical. And I said to her, I said, wait a second, have we been putting 15% away? And she said, yeah. So we had like 60,000 in an account for taxes,
but we got money back for taxes. So that money is extra money that we could then, you know, buy real estate with, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Then you can use it the way you see fit.
But it's money he hadn't psychologically possessed. You know, that was the game changer because he couldn't see it. He didn't know it existed. It took the discipline of getting it out of his sight.
That is the whole goal. So I am bowing to both of you right now. I wish you could see me because you're actually just perfectly. The draw of temptation is very powerful. And when it's close and accessible, we have to use willpower. And willpower fatigues like a muscle. I can, you know, me is chocolate chip cookies. If there was a baked chocolate chip cookie batch in front of me, I would say no the first time. The second time, I'd be like, nah. The third time, I start sniffing it. And the fourth time, I would be diving in with that stuff. So my wife and family knows, you know, keep the chocolate chip cookies out of daddy's way because he's an animal.
Right.
And because there's no chocolate chip cookies in his house, I don't eat them. I do not eat them. So that's the lesson. Money, even if we pre-reserve money for clear purposes like profit or our tax liabilities or anything like that, there will come the moment where our mind says, well, it's just sitting there. We don't need to use that for 3-4 months anyway. The tax bill isn't coming for a while. Why don't you just kind of borrow from that account? And that's where we actually are stealing from ourselves and damaging ourselves and then undermining the entire system. So keep it out of sight.
Now, I want to ask a question about paying yourself, though, because the owner pay is up to 50%. Right. In the way that you allocate your money, owners get at least 50%.
Well, let me just couch that. First of all, it depends on the size of your business. A business doing under 500,000 or under 250,000, that applies. A bigger business, it changes. The second thing I want to share is those are numbers based upon these fiscally elite. I surveyed 1,000 companies. That is the typical setup for a broad range of companies. So the final answer is 50% is just a suggested target, but it may not be perfect. You actually may be higher, you may be less, but it's just a rough target.
Okay. Because I, you know, the first time I did this, I realized if I take 50% and I issue it to us as individuals, then we have to report it on our Social Security number as personal earnings. And I want to minimize the amount that I take out of my business because the business is a tax-friendlier vehicle than just paying it as Natalie Morris, the lady, and Clayton Morris, the man. Mm-hmm. So I always look at that 50% and I say, well, I don't want to be taxed on that 50%. So is that personal income? Is that taxed? You know, do you have any tips on that? Because I'm not sure I'm doing it right. Totally. And my accountant this year, I was like, well, I'll just 1099 myself from the business. He's like, you can't 1099 yourself. So I did that wrong. So what tips do you have for me?
Great question.
As a dummy.
I'm actually rewriting Profit First for an expanded and kind of a new and improved edition as questions like this have come in. The answer is that profit, or I call it owner's pay account, not profit, owner's pay account, I really should have called it owner's compensation because you can extract benefit in multiple ways. Like you may lease a car or own a car, but the company can pay for it. But quite frankly, you derive the vast majority of benefits, your personal vehicle and maybe some business use, but the business can pay for it. And that's a legitimate tax expense. So I've changed owner's pay to owner's compensation. And then I suggest work very closely with your accountant to find ways to reduce the tax consequences and extract the most benefit from it. But still allocate 50% to owner's comp because I want you, Natalie, and you, Clayton, benefiting from that 50%. The way it's extracted out may not be a paycheck because it causes higher taxes. It may be a car or a quasi-investment or maybe a legit, whatever. But an accountant will direct you on it. The lesson is always allocate that percentage. And then when it's the actual extraction of that money, get the direction of a sophisticated accountant on that.
Okay. I see what I did wrong there. Because I wasn't sure that you couldn't 1099 yourself. And then, you know, my accountant is like, what did you do? And he's like, we have to have a talk about this. So, you know, the point is to benefit from it legitimately, but it doesn't have to be on your personal Social Security.
Right, it doesn't have to be pay.
Okay.
And shame on me, because in the book, I didn't explain that. I just said, this is for your benefit as your pay. But really, I want people to understand that you don't have to take money out as money. You can take it out in different vehicles, and I don't mean necessarily a car, but different ways that reduce your tax consequence or negate it fully, but you still extract all the benefit from it.
Because my parents owned a small business as I was growing up, and they always paid my father a very small salary because they wanted to reinvest in the business. And it didn't make sense to me until I read your book and Tom Wheelwright's book. And now that makes sense why we, you know, owned cars inside of the business, but my dad still took a small salary. So, you know, I'm doing the same thing for us, trying to live as, you know, as leanly as possible out of the profit, out of the owner pay portion of our profit.
And the only tweak I'll make to that is I suggest don't reinvest in the business as much as reinvest in you. Now, I got to be very careful how I explain this because it sounds like a very negative thing, and I'm not. When we allocate money to owner's comp, I want you and Clayton to benefit from that money, and I want you to do it through your business to reduce your tax consequences, but I don't want it going necessarily back into the business to facilitate growth of the business. And the reason I'm saying that is because most of the time, reinvested money never facilitates the growth of the business. It actually compromises it. And I'll give you an example of this. NASA made back, this is in the 70s, a oxygen filter tank, and you're probably already familiar with this because if you saw the movie Apollo 13, a big core of this movie revolved around that component. There was astronauts, this is a true story, astronauts up in outer space circling the moon, and their oxygen filter system was failing, and they were given about 12 more hours of oxygen before they were all going to die. And it's a true story again. The tanks and that oxygen filter system, NASA spent tens of millions of dollars to make those things. And then I don't know if, did either of you see that movie by
chance?
Oh,
yeah, sure.
Okay. So then you'll know the next scene that happens. Oxygen tanks are failing. The lead engineer in Houston calls in all the engineers, a team of like five or six men and women, takes a box, a cardboard box with stuff, and dumps on the table and says, that's what we have left on that shuttle up there. On that capsule, make an oxygen filter. And they did. They did. They made an oxygen filter out of duct tape and used parts. Now, here's the irony. When NASA was given tens of millions of dollars to reinvest, to plow back, to push into this program to develop an oxygen filter, they did. And it cost tens of millions. And when they were given just spare parts and were told, you have to make an oxygen filter, they did. And so the lesson is this. If we avail the money to our business will find the way to utilize that money, but not necessarily be innovative about it. That's the great irony. When we have to do the same, get the same results with less money or greater results with less money, it forces us to find new ways, rule-breaking ways, innovative ways. So that's why I'm hesitant when people say, oh, I'm going to reserve more money and plow back in my business or reinvest in my business. Be really careful of that. You actually may be following the easy, obvious path because now you have the means. When you don't give yourself the means, you have to find an innovative breakthrough way of doing the same thing.
So it might be instead of us, you know, investing it back in Morris Invest, our investment company, instead, Natalie and I just buying another property, which benefits us, but it also helps mitigate our overall taxes.
Right. That could be a strategy. Hmm. That totally could be a strategy.
Love it. So I wanted to ask you from a real estate perspective, if our, you know, as our listeners are setting up their family structure, given your experience with real estate, buying properties, rental income, are there any unique things that we would need to do to implement the profit first system?
Yeah. So I'd say it's over my head because I don't do real estate. I'm not an investor in real estate. And I specifically have avoided it because I'm not versed in it. And I found that for me, and I believe this is true for most people, is when you find what your strength and capability is, go all in on that. I think strengths can be amplified by tenfold, but trying to walk in an area that I'm not familiar, I may stumble and trip up. So I'm not the guy. Now, let me also couch that one. I'm not trying to pitch myself here or anything, but I started an organization specifically because I had questions like this. I got a call from a manufacturer saying, hey, how do you employ lean manufacturing processes when it comes to profit first and real estate investors like yourself and every category in the sun, real retail stores, everything. So I started an organization called Profit First Professionals where we now have industry-specific experts who can address all the nuances far times, a thousand times better than I can. So I'd have to, I hate to say this, but I'd have to defer that. I don't
I actually have a buddy of mine who actually hired and worked with your company, and it's been a game changer for his business. So that's a testimonial, an unsolicited testimonial right there for that. So I was just curious, you know, if there was any sort of structuring of like when we obviously we get rental income that comes in, we're treating it as, you know, if there was any specific difference from the profit first system. But it sounds like, Natalie, we're doing it really according to the book, right?
Mostly. Yeah.
Yeah, you are. I mean, here, I'll give you some more generalities, but something specific for real estate. So when income comes in, we want to put it typically all in one tray. I call it the income account. So this is now actually a fifth account. So we talked about profit, owner's pay, tax, and operating expenses. Fifth account is income. And this may help a lot. And if you're not doing it yet, this is something I'm actually had in the advanced section of Profit First, the book, but now I'm putting it right in the beginning because I found it have the greatest impact, is if we set one account solely to collect that rental income and whatever other income you generate into this income account, that's the serving tray. And you start understanding the cash flow, the inbound cash flow, because that money accumulates. And then periodically, maybe twice a month on the 10th and 25th, for example, you would allocate that money out based upon the percentages to different accounts. So that income account goes from wherever it was back to zero, and then cash starts accumulating in there again, and it goes back to zero, and then accumulating again, and it keeps going through this iterative process, and you start seeing what your normal inbound cash flow is. But the other thing, too, to consider is the four or five accounts, that's just the basic foundation. My businesses, I now own three businesses, they have on average 8 or 9 accounts. And the reason we have so many accounts is sometimes for businesses, there's very specific needs. If you need to accumulate cash specifically to buy new real estate, new properties, maybe you want to have a real estate purchasing account and you allocate a percentage there, and that becomes the trigger. So you have your normal operating expenses for the ongoing maintenance and services you need to provide for your existing real estate. But then you set up this additional account that's specific to buying new property. And now it's very easy to distinguish where you stand on each account.
Oh, I love that. I love that. We don't have that set up yet. That could be a game changer for us.
No, we don't. Yeah. And at the end of your book, you talk about how you can, it's sort of like extra credit accounts. And that kind of blew my mind open a little bit. And I was like, whoa, too much. But I think at this point now we have to go back. And now that because I just wanted to try like Profit First for Dummies, you know, like the first four accounts. And now that I think we've been at this about a year, after I think I got a good handle on it, I can go back through and do the extra credit accounts. So I'm ready for that. But I did have one reader question based on my blog post that said, you know, we're a new startup and we're trying to pay off debt. And this was a startup that I think they make like cookies or something, like some food product. Mm. So they had to make a capital investment in the equipment. And so they were like, where do we allocate our money? We can't take 50% off. What do you say to people who have debt to pay off in their business first?
Yeah. So now I'm going to sound like a total schmo at first, but whenever someone says had to, like I had to buy equipment, I'm like, did you really have to? Or did you not consider the alternatives because you had the availability of money, right? So they got that money somehow and then they followed an obvious path. So I'm being a little schmucky here, but I always like to criticize that because.
Right. And I don't know, you know, how to make these specific types of like, I don't know, they're cake
pops.
Nor
do I, but I always like to challenge people and say there's an alternative path if we're simply willing to consider it or force ourselves to consider it. But if you have debt, first of all, welcome to 83% of small businesses. Like that's the norm. I'm not saying that's a good thing, but that's the norm. And listen, I've been there. It sucks. Here's what you do. You still set up a profit account. Some people have come to me and said, Mike, I can't be profitable until I'm out of debt. Then I'll be profitable. And my answer is the only way to get out of debt is by being profitable. You have to be. You have to make more money than you're spending in order to pay back what you owe. So you have to be profitable. So you set up the accounts the same way. You allocate money to a profit the same way. But when you do your profit distribution, and I suggest doing a quarterly profit distribution, literally every 90 days, when that money or the portion of the profit that you decide to take out comes out, the vast majority of it, 95% or more, goes toward debt eradication. You whack that debt, but you must still reward yourself with a portion. So say $1,000 comes out of your profit account. If we're doing 95%, $950, a big payment goes and hits that debt. As much as you can in the meantime, you're maintaining and paying the debt as best you can. But every time you do a profit distribution, a big portion goes to crushing that debt. But you still keep 5%, say $50, to celebrate. And this is the mistake. I've seen too many businesses, and some experts report this too, do everything you can to crush debt, eradicate debt at all costs, eradicate debt. The problem is, if you're simply in eradicating debt mode, you never have a celebratory mode, you never have that celebration, you start to resent your business. Could you imagine 5 years, 4 years, 3 years, your business doesn't pay you, you keep deferring it? So listen, we got to get rid of that debt, but we still have to reward ourselves. That positive and very material affirmation that this is working is extremely important to keep the momentum going. So that's how I'd handle it with them.
Oh, I love it. Okay. I love it. So I think we're probably ate up so much of your time, but I think this was fantastic. Is there any ground, Natalie, you don't think we covered that I want our audience to really like go out there and start implementing this right away as they're acquiring their first rental property and getting things set up the right way? Is there anything we didn't cover that we need to?
Well, I also want to be able to give you the chance to plug the fact that you have like a network of accountants who can implement this for you, right? If you don't feel up to doing it yourself, you can go to Mike's website and he can point you in the right direction of someone in your area who understands this system and can implement it for you.
Yeah, thank you. I did kind of mention it a little earlier, really not attempting to plug it, but it's a resource that's available for you. So here's what I found. The core concept of profit first is very simple. Pay yourself first in your business. That's it. But it's kind of like the stock market. Everyone knows the core principle of the stock market. Buy low, sell high, do that again and again, you'll be a billionaire. Like, you know, that's it. But there's a reason there's stockbrokers and investment bankers and all these different people, because of how sophisticated the market is after that basic principle. So in profit first, it's the same way. What we just discussed is the basic principles of profit first, but it's in the nuances where the real execution happens. So I did start a group with a colleague. His name is Ron. Ron and I started this company. We now have 128 different accountants and bookkeepers specializing in different industries that know all the nuances about profit first. So they'll help you get it implemented. And then secondly, they'll actually go through all the different elements of it to make sure you continue on the path, reducing your tax consequences, maximizing your profit, and taking home as much as you deserve to take home. And the site that we set up that has this is called ProfitFirstProfessionals.com. If you go there and click on the find button, we'll find you someone that's a match for you.
Amazing. The book is Profit First, A Simple System to Transform Any Business from a Cash Eating Monster to a Money Making Machine. Our guest has been Mike Michalowicz. It's been a true pleasure. We get to thank you personally for sort of shifting and changing our lives with our structure and our family business. Mike, you are the man. And we hope everyone will go over to our show notes page, go to morrisinvest.com/podcast. We're going to have links to everything we just talked about, including going over to Mike's company to find an accountant in your area. Click on the Find tab and find somebody who can work with you. Also links to the book and spreadsheets that Natalie was talking about so you can implement this in your own family. We'll see you back here next time on another episode of Investing in Real Estate. Thanks, everyone.